I want to apologize for the disruption that my absent-mindedness caused. The reading is from Hebrews chapter 1. God, who at various times and in various ways spoke in times past to the fathers by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the worlds, who being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins, sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high, having become so much better than the angels, as he has by inheritance obtained a more excellent name than they.
Can you hear me? Please say yes. Yeah, I didn't know how I was going to go this morning. I had to pry my mouth open even to ink this. One of the things that people are seemingly obsessed about, it's not just kids anymore, but some of the latest movies. I mean, they've brought out every superhero in the comic book and dug into the past, even looking for more. There's a fascination, I guess, with having some sort of power, especially in light of trying to deal with problems we have in life. And it'd be so much nicer, if we were from another planet, had powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men, or were given something by some guardian of the universe or whatever. But in fact, even in a religious world, they speculate that a lot of why people like to believe in miracles is it's nice to know that there's something there that we can kind of call upon, to get us out of problems. But what I'd like to cover this morning is something we kind of know about, but we really haven't looked that much into or explored for our own benefit. And it kind of brings out a whole different reality. A much larger and more powerful reality for our lives if we can learn to tap into it. We're going to do a three-part series on God's providence. A lot of times we look at God's miracles, but I think after you get through with this, you're going to realize that God's providence is a lot more powerful than God's miracles. And it's something that we can call upon every day. When many people think about God working through miracles, they have a picture in mind of a God who periodically interrupts the regular flow of things and tinkers with the laws that are usually in place. They see God as an intruder into the natural order that he initially set up and that he leaves alone for a large portion of time. It is as if God has created a cosmic aquarium filled with fish, rocks, hiding areas and water filtering systems with us included. And in this, he sits outside the system watching patiently until he is needed, dipping his hand into the system to add something here or there or take something away from it. Stop to think, is that the way you kind of conceive of how life is? That there's a natural order of things. In fact, we even begin to conceive of a Mother Nature independent of God. The problem with this view is that it pictures a system that somehow works independently of God. In this system, it is thought that if God does not miraculously intervene in our life, then the system still works fine without him. And the concept of providence, as illustrated in the Bible, we have a totally different picture presented to us. The Bible provides a picture of God's activity in the world that is much different than this model. instead of a self-sustaining system that God created at the beginning and primarily has left to his own devices, Scripture teaches us that the entire system constantly relies on God. The writer of Hebrews explains that God appointed Jesus Christ as the heir of all things, and he presently is upholding all things by the word of his power. That's the context that Warren just read. Notice it is not that at one time Christ created things, put up it all in the laws and things, and then just step back and let it all, like clockwork, you know, carry itself out. But he, at the present time, is still upholding all things, keeping it together. This is why I said, you know, when you think of a miracle, you think of, oh, you know, maybe some of the hardest ones, you know, resurrection from the dead or the sun staying in place, whatever. And you think, oh, ooh, ah, you know, it's something that does cause, you know, awe, you know, from us. But stop to think about it. Not just the sun, but all the suns at all times, all the planets, the whole universe, whatever is going on is being held in place by God on a constant second-by-second event. Can you imagine the power needed in order to do that? But this is how God displays his power. This is why we can look at the heavens and they do declare, you know, the glory, the majesty, the power of God, because they are a display of him constantly working every minute, every day. Paul confirmed this idea in Colossians when he spoke of Jesus saying, all things were created through him and for him, and he is before all things, and in him all things consist. Now, stop to think about this, and this we need to kind of reevaluate our reality. And we can liken it to, you know, sometimes how arrogant we get as young people in demanding our rights. And, I mean, while we're still living with our parents, you know, we have a tendency to think of it, it's my room, you know, and I can do what I want. I'm old enough now, even though you may be still 16 living at home. And it's only later that it begins to dawn on you how much your parents sacrificed. And it really wasn't your house. It wasn't your clothes that you were wearing. You know, they're termed that. But who bought them? Who paid for the food? Who paid for the house? Only afterwards do we come back and go, you know, we realize how much our parents sacrificed for us. You know, an education, protection, all these sort of things. And it really wasn't ours. It was totally theirs, and they just kind of made us feel like it was ours. The same with this world. It's not ours. This whole universe was created by God for his son, Jesus Christ. We're living in God's house. In fact, Hebrews goes on to talk about Moses being a servant in the house and Jesus being a son in the house. So as we're living in this universe, we're living here in something that doesn't belong to us. It belongs to our Lord. Further, notice that not only was Jesus active in the creation, but the created world continues to consist in him. It is important to recognize that God originally designed a world of natural laws that would be ideal for him to potentially or providentially use throughout the course of human history. Now, let me explain that. When we started thinking of concepts like time and space and whatever, they kind of illustrated as a graph put out there. And we had a tendency to think of things set in course. I mean, if you look at the original designs of our solar system, it was, in fact, it was like the Earth in the middle, and then everything with a nice little orbit around it. And then we switched, you know, out and we realized the sun was the center of our solar system. But even then, the orbits of the planets were all exactly circular. We like this nice little thing we're thinking about, you know, an orderly universe. And then the more we understood about it, the more we realized that things were moving, you know, that the orbits of the planets were more elliptical. You know, apogees, perigees, whatever. There was a farther extreme and a nearer extreme. And then with, you know, Hubble's discovery of, you know, the things are kind of spreading out, you know, which brought in the Big Bang Theory, that if you look at the planets and the stars, they all seem to be expanding. But what they don't tell you also is there's some things that are coming at us. So there's things constantly moving. And when Einstein looked at this, you know, he postulated all these things in his theories, but didn't want to actually believe what he was looking at. And so he rewrote his theories to say that everything was static. And then, you know, eventually convinced others that it's not. Even now is, you know, this picture here, when they describe things like black holes, they like to take that grid pattern and stick something in it. And that's the little thing in the middle here. Is, you know, what it does is it weighs so much that it actually begins to warp time and space. And that's kind of hard to think about. But it's brought on a lot of theories of wormholes and everything else for, hoping for our kind of travel that we do in outer space. But the point is that things can be warped. They can be manipulated. They can be worked with. And that's what God does. He didn't create a universe that just stays there stiff. He created something that providentially he can jink with, turn, you know, mold, you know, stretch, whatever is necessary in order to bring about his will. So it's not a hands-off universe. It's a universe with God. Well, this is why the prophets describe, you know, he causes the grass to grow. He causes the rain to fall. He's got his hand in everything. This is why we'll never predict, you know, in too far in the future, weather patterns. Because they have a mind. They have a will. God's. So does all life. You know, the grass has to be willed. All those seeds out there have to be willed to grow. Whose will are they using? Not their own. God's. And so as we look around us, you know, we should be able to see. You know, I remember when our astronauts first went into outer space. And one of them read from the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And they could see the face of God out there. And then the cosmonauts went up, you know, Russian, you know, astronauts. And first thing they said was, I don't see God. Depends on what you're looking for. If you're not looking for him, you can't see him. But how can you see the will of a plant growing? Or the will of the weather, you know, as it's churning and roiling in space and dumping water, you know, where it chooses. It's God's choosing. There's no Mother Nature. It's God upholding all things and willing it to happen. His use of these laws to bring about his purposes is not an interruption of the regular flow of things, since the regular flow of things constantly depends on his power to sustain it. As Richard, I'm going to pronounce his name, Bube. I hope it's French, because the American pronunciation just doesn't set well. As Richard Bube wrote in his book, The Human Quest, the natural order exists only because God is constantly active in upholding it. God does not use natural processes if they existed without him. God does not take advantage of natural laws to accomplish his wills as if the laws existed without him. We see immediately why the question, God, can God intervene in the world ruled by orderly laws? It's a meaningless question. He intervenes all the time. It's his laws that he's using in order to uphold all things. There's no world ruled by orderly laws except that one constantly maintained in existence by the activity of God. It is because of this fact that scholar John Walton defines providence as the way God acts through all so-called natural processes, whether in creation, nature, or history. God's got a hand in all of it. His addition of the adjective so-called, that is referring to Walden, highlights the fact that the laws of nature are perpetually dependent on the supernatural God. In the term providence, then, we see God's perpetual upholding of the entire universe. If he took a vacation, it'd all implode. Now, special prophets. I don't know how much you know about providence, but you know there's two providences. A special one and a general. The general providence of God upholds all nature. The way the term providence is usually applied, however, refers to God's coordination of events in order to bring about specific desired outcomes for individuals. This has been referred to as God's special providence. It often is spoken of in the Bible as it is seen in the lives of those who follow God. So you want to tap into this power in the universe that is really greater than miracles. Be a follower of God. We see the difference between the general and specific providence when we compare Matthew 5:45, which says that God makes his sun rise on the evil and the good and sends his rain on the just and the unjust. So he's looking out for all creation, generally. But specifically, in Romans 8:28, it says, Paul says, we being Christians, or God's people, we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. So there is a specific or special providence for those that are part of God's people. I mean, he's working this providence in the general sense, but he's bringing it a more specific focus for those who love him. In one sense, all life comes from God, and the fact that anyone can take a breath is a providential blessing. Your next heartbeat, your next breath, comes because God willed it so. We're living in his universe. This is, in essence, what Paul told the Athenians, that God who made the world and all things in it, since he is the Lord of heaven and earth. Notice, this is along the same vein when Jesus told the Sadducees that, have you not heard that God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? What's the implication? That they're still alive. He can only be a Lord over those that are alive enough to subject themselves to it. Well, this is the same of the world around us. He is the Lord of heaven and earth. Well, he can only be the Lord of heaven and earth if he is in control of everything right now. He doesn't dwell in temples made with human hands. This is defining or narrowing or encapsulizing God into some little thing that men can deal with or even argue with. But who is this? This is Paul going, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. Your very subsistence, your food, your breathing, your air, whatever, that comes basically from God. In all things, Justin was talking about the blessings we receive from him. They come from God on a daily basis because he's able to do that and wants to. He made from one man every nation of mankind to live on the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation. This is one of the things we've talked about when it comes to looking at governments. The Old Testament, in several places, talks about when God wants to, he raises up a nation to serve him. And when he wants to, he tears it down and gets rid of it if it no longer serves him. I mean, we can look at that in modern times. You know, all the nations that have at one time served God or put him as the focus, at one time Germany was very central to God and expanded their territory. And then evolution took over, you know, the rise of Nazis, and you know, God kind of fell out of favor. But then, you know, England became a champion of God in things, and their nation, you know, took on the whole world. You know, the sun never set on the British Empire, as the slogan went. And they fell out of favor. Notice a trend here. When God is with them, or they with God, everything goes fine. But when they begin to turn against him, he pulls them back. And it doesn't matter how powerful they are. You take the Soviet Union, who started off, you know, against God. I mean, when we live through it, it seemed like the most incredible power that came along, and it was, you know, its armies, its navies, its air force was a lot bigger than the United States, 5 times in some places. So what did they go wrong? They started off by saying, there is no God. And as powerful as the Soviet Union seemed to be at one time, it's now a footnote in history. It didn't last long as most empires do. God appoints the boundaries, the times. And when men forget that, they lose big time. Paul goes on that they would seek God. Why is he constantly around us and working miracles and blessing and everything else? Why is he looking right over our shoulder? So that we'll get a clue. We'll begin to understand this and realize, wow, you know, if I live my life and I'm kicking against God's power, I'm going to lose out in this life and the one to come. But if I align myself to go with the flow, I mean, let's go back to the kids in the house. Which children would make out better? The ones that constantly rebel and, you know, arrogantly declare their own rights and, you know, they can live by themselves, or the ones that go, okay, oh, I think I'll take out the trash. I'll try to do my chores. I'll try to be a help to my parents. I think I told you one time, the last high school class I taught where I was, you know, before coming here, one of the parents came up to me and goes, what did you do to the kids? What do you mean? She said, my kids are now, you know, they're obeying my orders, they're doing their chores, you know, whatever. And she said, what did you do to them? I said, well, I brought in some newspapers. I told them to look in the want ads. I said, go through the phone books and stuff, find out how much things cost, how much your bed costs, how much food costs, you know, how much it costs to get a room, whatever, and then see whether you can find a job if you drop out of school right now. The ads that are in there, and see what it's going to be like to live without your parents. And, you know, their whole attitude changed. They realize how good they have it. I mean, nowadays, a lot of kids come back to live with their parents because, you know, they realize, yeah, it was a lot nicer. You know, a lot less cares and worries and problems. And I don't understand how Dad was making it. We need to realize that with God, how much we depend on him and how much easier life will be and how much better off we'll be if we just start aligning ourselves with God's will. In another sense, God has promised that all the events and lives of those who love him will be orchestrated. I mean, that's a good word for it. It's like having a symphony of events out there, and God is orchestrating everything in order to align with those that are his in a way that they will work together for ultimate good. This way, man is allowed a free will. And you do have a free will. You can choose to go any way you want to. And God is going to use that. If you make good decisions, he'll use that. When people make bad decisions, he'll use that. So that ultimately things come out for those that are his. You know, the evil will fall away, and the good will begin to shine. It is important to recognize what the Bible does not say about God's providence. There is an idea that if a person is a faithful child of God, then God will make sure that he or she is always prosperous, has a wonderful spouse, is blessed with children, and lives a life of comfort and ease. Reading the wrong book. I know there's preachers out there. Reverend Ike used to say, why wait for your pie by and by? You know, you can get it now. You know, he used to wear jewelry and says, God has blessed me and all the wealth. I've got, you know, 3 automobiles and 2 houses and everything else. And you can have that too just by believing in God. If you look at the life of Christ, like he tells his disciples, I don't even have a pillow to sleep on. God doesn't promise you that sort of stuff. He does promise you in heaven, which will be more than a reward for whatever you have to give up now. Sometimes you'll be blessed. There's people that, you know, we read about God that were very blessed. Abraham, Job. You know. In fact, when they endured the problems, you know, they're even more blessed. What God does promise that is, it's clear that those who love and follow God often experience serious hardships and trials. Why? Well, for one thing, you're trying to stand for the truth. As Barclay pointed out, you know, for people that gave in to Nazi Germany, they didn't see anything wrong with the Nazis. You know, they went to their parties, everything else. The Vichy government, you know, was very successful. You know, they didn't come under the tortures or anything. It's those that took a stand against it that felt the full brunt in power and the viciousness of the Nazi army. And that's what you're going to feel in this life. If you take a stand for what's right, you're going to experience the power of evil. And this is one of the reasons why we need God. Now, if you want to go through life, go, I just won't tell anybody I'm a Christian. You know, I'll go along with whatever policies, whatever. Yeah, life's going to be fine. But then there's going to be a judgment day and a reckoning. In fact, this is something you can tell. You know, just ask people, you know, as evil as they get, do you believe in God? And whatever they say, if it's in the negative, just tell them, you will. You have the choice of just ignoring God, you can convince yourself all you want to that there is no God, but unfortunately, there is a day of judgment. And on that day, everyone will believe in God. The difference being is, if you believed and decided to obey his will. Because all that who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. But Paul tells Timothy. James told his readers to count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces impatience. The trials come because God is trying to make a good person out of you. Someone with what we call grit, sand, whatever. Life shouldn't go well. The Arabs have a proverb, all sunshine makes a desert. So you want some uptime and some downtime, you know, some downtime so you can appreciate the uptime more. And working through the trials and the problems, whatever, is going to make you someone who's got stamina, perseverance, and a trust in God. Peter told his readers who were suffering government persecution not to think it strange, concerning the fiery trial, as though some strange thing were happening to you, but rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings. Even the Lord was disciplined in obedience by the things that he suffered, Hebrews 5:8. God does not promise that everything that happens to those who love him will be good. He doesn't always promise that it'll be bad too. But instead he promises that they will work together so that the end result is good. Okay? In all the evil that's been in the world, and a good study of history will convince you just how much things have changed. As just noted recently, by this one individual who was kind of surprised, you know, various commentators. He said, the poor in this world live better now than they ever have. Now, how can you say that? Well, it's because sometimes the way we define poor, like he pointed out, okay, they're rich, you know, get in their private jet and go someplace. The poor do too. They have to stand in line and go through the TSA and everything else, but they get on a personal jet and they fly someplace else. Well, the rich may get in a car and drive someplace, but the poor do too. It's just not a Rolls Royce. Maybe an old clunker. But they have it better than other people have in the whole history of the world. They eat better food. They wear better clothes. Even in poor countries, you know, the kids are wearing Nikes and jeans and, you know, whatever. You know, they find some way of getting it. The result has been consistently good for men. You know, it comes about through the effect of Christianity. Conclusion of part one. God created the world and upholds it by the word of his power. You know, just think about some of these expressions. Yeah, he didn't have to sit there and work with it, and like some kind of a weird magician or arcanist or sorcerer, summing up the powers of demons and stuff like that. Yeah, here's God. He just spoke it into existence. Didn't even have to roll up his sleeves. You know, didn't have to give it one of these, you know, tingling of the fingers and stuff like that. He just spoke it into existence. Very casual. No sweat. No effort. And he does the same thing by upholding it, by the word of his power, or powerful word, however you want to translate it. We can't even imagine what kind of power that is. I mean, when we're looking at the principles of cause and effect, the cause always has to be greater than the effect. You know, that's one of the laws we live under. So when you start taking in the amount of power necessary in order to speak this universe, I mean all of it, into existence, as impressive as that is, and incomprehensible it is, to think about how powerful everything is. I mean, our sun is one of the smaller, less powerful ones. I mean, when you start leaving our solar system, you're into a realm of exploding, you know, planets, novas, you know, dual suns. I mean, it's a hot universe, a very powerful universe. And God is upholding everything. He has to be more powerful than the universe in order to produce it, cause and effect. He designed the natural laws that he perpetuates, the sustains, in a way that he can work through them to bring about what he desires. If he has to cause the sun to stop in the middle of the sky, no problem. Or make the shadows go backwards, no problem. It's not a big thing for him. It's only a big thing for us as we look at it. But he is so powerful that he is working everything. And we have to understand that. This universe is his plaything. It's his room, not ours. And the more faster we understand that, the more we can tap into the power of God working in our lives and increase the blessings. Through human history, he has worked both providentially and miraculously, which do you think now is more powerful? One-time suspension of one little thing, or working everything? Look at the past. When Jesus turned water into wine, I mean, the universe naturally does that. I mean, it rains, it goes in the soil, the water mixes with the elements of the soil, the vine, the grapevine takes it up, you know, photosynthesis of the sun produces a fruit. The fruit comes out of the flower, and eventually it begins to ferment. Naturally turns to wine. All Jesus was doing was stripping away the apparatus and going, I'm the one doing this anyway. He's the one doing it all. He wants us to open our eyes to see the world around us, to see it as we should. As, Elijah, open my servant's eyes that he may see what I see, the host of heaven, working. The fact that he uses miracles in the past, however, does not mean that he still or must use them today in order to accomplish his ultimate will. Doesn't need them today. He can do whatever he wants to accomplish through providence. The Christian should believe in miracles of the Bible, for they are part of God's working in the world. God used to talk to the patriarchs directly. He chooses not to anymore. He's changed things. It is unclear that he's still working miracles in this day and age, but it's very clear that providence is still alive and well. It's just as powerful and ongoing. We can believe in miracles, just don't rely on them. But the weird thing is, we can rely on God's providence. We have to. It's in us, working every single second. Got a project for you. Away from here. I mean, usually with the invitations, I'm going to try to change them up. It's not always just, baptism. You might get a little tired of hearing about baptism. But just as a project for today, or this week, go out and actually look around you and see life differently. What's making that bug, go across there, or having them all come together and doing something and carrying something or making something. The bees, the birds, the flowers all growing around you. That's God at work. Look at his handiwork. If you can discover, what its purpose is and, why it's here, it's all something God is doing. And even look at yourself. I mean, to some extent, you have a will. You defy the laws of gravity. Anytime you raise your hand, or move any kind of thing on your body, to walk, you're superseding some law of nature with another law. And that's all God's doing. But he's doing it constantly on a epic scale, on a universal scale. And all it takes is us to recognize it. And the more we get awed by the things going on around us and what is taking place, and especially God's patience and mercy, we should be down on our knees constantly thanking God for what is transpiring. It makes more sense now when Paul says, pray without ceasing. Why? Because part of your prayer should be thanksgiving. It should be asking God for intercession, for helping us out. Do you believe in, God answering prayer? How do you think he does it? Through miracles? Doesn't need them. He can work things, everything around us, to answer our prayers, to help us out, to bless us, to defeat our enemies. The more you realize this, the closer you draw to God, and the more you walk with him. If there's anything we can do to help, please let us know as we stand to sing.